The Touchdown City Show is presented by Masters Law Firm, West Virginia's personal injury lawyers, and Parmar Stores. If there's not a Parmar store near you now, there will be one soon. Coming to you from the Stone Church Studio in St. Albans, West Virginia, this is the Touchdown City Show.
Welcome into the Touchdown City Show presented by Masters Law and our friends at Parmar Stores. If there's not a Parmar near you now, there will be one soon. I'm Anthony Lewis in the Stone Church Studio for the podcast version of the Touchdown City Show with Michael Sussman and Derek Bailey. And before we get into yesterday's breakdown, I want to kind of explain a little further how our weeks are going with the podcast. So on Sunday nights, Monday mornings, we drop the podcast version, which you're listening to now. And then on Tuesday, you can be on the lookout for the radio version of the show. And then we'll also put out some press conferences so you can listen to those. And then on Thursday, you'll get the long-form interview of the from the 1993 feature guest, which this week will be Aaron Beasley. Last week was Mike Baker. You'll get the full 35, 45 minutes. So just wanted to kind of get that out. It's been a little bit of a schedule change, so people are a little confused. So I thought I would let everybody know. What's up, guys?
I'm a little tired. Thanks to a rain delay. Hour 54 minutes last night, we were paused against the Dukes. So the post-game presser, I think, got done at like 12:15. Stopped at a Westin hotel on the way back. It was a fun experience all in all. WVU ultimately figures it out after a really lethargic start to the game. but I'm dragging today, going to be honest.
It was a long night for a lot of – well, not for a lot of fans. Felt like about 2,500 stuck around after the rain.
Man, when they sent everybody out of the stadium – you could just see people getting in their cars and leaving.
You can't blame people. But look at, there was a game yesterday, Purdue and Virginia Tech, you know, obviously. They started it. They were supposed to kick at noon. It was delayed. They got into the game and started and played maybe two, I think they played about 7-8 minutes. They were playing the end of that game last night at like 8 o'clock.
Yeah,
they were playing that game.
It's a long day. But anyway, West Virginia knocks off Duquesne 56-17 in a delayed rain, lightning, not a lot of wind, which was good because I had to go back over to the tailgate and make sure the tent and all that stuff was going to fly away.
But, all good.
Yeah, we were all good, all safe.
Is that the first rain delay or weather delay since the Marshall game in like 2011?
It's only the second rain delay in stadium history.
So Marshall was the other.
Yeah.
That one was a long one, too.
And it's the first game in history without a halftime.
Yeah, but halftime was plenty long enough.
So let's get into it. So you stayed. You just got a hotel. I was thinking about you on the way down the road last night.
Yeah, knocked out an hour of the trip on 79 South, but was not able to go all the way. Got out of there after midnight.
Yeah, it was, it was a long day for anyone working or there doing stuff. But let's talk about the sluggish start. I mean, that was a really lethargic start, as you mentioned, Michael. And I was telling Derek before we hit record, I think a lot of times that first type of mistake, that muff punt type situation, set the tone for what we saw until the rain delay.
That's a play where everybody's got to be yelling, what is it, poison, poison, poison. You got to communicate out there. That's basic football 101 that cannot happen in the dropped passes in the first quarter. You got to help out Garrett Green. He needs to get some confidence. He threw the ball beautifully, and early on that was the frustration. We know the secondary has flaws, but somebody make a play.
The thing I was frustrated with most was I felt like the defense was super lethargic. The secondary especially. This is Duquesne. I'm not knocking the kids at Duquesne. You know, they're good enough to play college football, which is impressive. Those guys were running wide open against the secondary. You get out there against like legitimate teams that West Virginia is going to see, it's going to be a massive problem. Obviously, the special teams mistake hurt as well. But you're in a possible, now they call it a rub route, they call it the offensive pass interference, but you're in a possible 14-14 game with Duquesne, what, a minute or two into the second quarter? It's going to happen. Tennessee and Austin Peay were 6-6 yesterday in the second quarter, but when you're West Virginia and you're trying to build confidence and everything from coming off a loss and you really don't know what you have, that's a game to build confidence in, and early on it did not look good at all.
To me, Burks and Wilson Lamp have been responsible for a lot of the breakdowns. The corners haven't been terrible with Ruffin and Beanie Bishop, but it's the interior of the secondary, or not the interior, but the middle, the safety position.
Down the middle of the field, I should have been specific. It's always open against West Virginia.
Yeah.
Right down the middle of the field. It's one of your safety positions, so somebody's got to cover the middle of the field.
Yeah. So, just a side note, you know, obviously, being at the game, traveling back last night, the whole deal. I get up this morning, I'll get on the ESPN Plus, put on the game so I can see what I've, you know, basically listened to. Because I'll be honest with you, I didn't stay after the rain delay and just drove on home and listened to it on the radio. So I wanted to put some visuals to what I listened to. And then I go back and listen to the press conferences and Sussman. You know, first they open up the questioning with, you know, the scholarship, and we'll get in on all that, all this positivity, and Sussman gut punches Neil Brown with, so tell me about your crappy secondary. Yeah. You could hear the tone of the whole press conference.
I mean, it's fact. Like, we're in a situation here where it's Duquesne. Duquesne is getting guys wide open down the field. That just spells trouble. I want Neil Brown to be successful. I want West Virginia to win every game. But when you see these issues year after year after year, how much can we take?
Well, you know, our $250 an hour defensive coordinator is not living up to the hype. We might need to send him back to the, to the bottom of the rung.
It's just bad.
Water boy.
To me, that's a team that West Virginia, in most years, in a normal West Virginia football team, that team's shut out. They don't even score.
Yeah.
I just had to know about the breakdowns. That's what I asked him about. There were six plays of 15 yards or more through the pass game. Three of over 30 yards or more. I think it was still the storyline. I mean, as far as a takeaway from the game, a huge hole in the secondary is still scary.
And let me also say this, because you're talking about negativity. I'm going to speak on negativity, too. Granted, he gave the kid a scholarship last night. Why wasn't he offered a scholarship out of high school? Was he really any worse than the wide receivers we've seen under Neil Brown? He's from Martinsburg. He caught like 9 touchdowns in the state championship game. Why was he not even offered out of high school?
I don't know what that kid's offers were. You could probably
I'm just.
I know he was like a preferred walk-on, and then, you know, and also too, where did they magically find a scholarship for this kid? But you know, obviously they like him, and I'm going to get into some of his stuff. But I want to ask you guys first about, give me your thoughts on Garrett Green. He was 10 of 18, 4 touchdowns. It's the first time since Will Grier was there that we had a quarterback throw for 4 touchdowns. I thought it was funny. The argument in the conversation last week was he couldn't throw the football, and he came out and really whipped it around the yard yesterday. I thought it was much improved. Now, granted, it was Duquesne, but at the same time, he looked better.
It's what you want to see in a game against Duquesne. He threw the ball. He hit downfield shots. He did what you wanted to see against Duquesne. However, like Michael said, some guys got to still catch the ball. I mean, like, he was 10 of 18, which you want to see more, like, more efficient, like a better percentage. But
well,
at
he
the same
have been
time,
13 or 14.
Yeah. I mean, at the same time, those guys have to catch the football. But he got the ball where it needed to be. He looked better again. Now, we'll see how he does as the competition steps up. But I thought he looked all right yesterday. I didn't have any issues with him.
He was very accurate pushing the ball down the field. I want to see him go to Cole Carter more and more. He could emerge as that security blanket that the offense needs.
I was specifically watching him this morning as I watched the game. He does a lot of good things. One, he finds a way to get open, and he's a hell of a run blocker. I watched a play with Donaldson. He came in motion, and they ran a sweep to the right, and he was the lead blocker. And Donaldson just hid behind him. He laid somebody out, and Donaldson took off. I mean, I think he could probably be one of the best tight ends we've had, maybe since Wesco. We've had some other good ones, but I think he's going to be a solid tight end for West Virginia.
It feels like they haven't had a good tight end since Wesco.
What's the kid's name that was there? He got hurt. He stayed hurt. He was pretty solid talent-wise, but he just stayed hurt. Yeah. But, you know, it's good to see him out there, you know, doing the right things. Nobody thinks that's an important position. And if you ever watch a tight end, it's very important.
If you have a tight end that can run and catch, you have a massive, massive advantage on the defense.
Nico gets in yesterday.
Excuse me, run block and catch.
Usually, even when you play a regular, you know, two quarters, even when a team is up like 38 to nothing in the third quarter, they usually put the starters back out for a series or two. And I just thought it was interesting that Brown just said, hell with it, I'm making the swap. Only up 28 at that point, and really because of the explosion. But they threw Nico in. But what was important was they put him in with the first team. That was the first team line. He was still out there with Anderson and Donaldson. What'd you guys think of Nico?
I saw him deliver a really nice back shoulder ball about 20 yards down the left sideline, and it was perfect. It definitely comes out of his hands faster than Garrett Green if you're trying to compare the two. I don't think that Neil Brown let him take the arm out for a walk enough times. It was too much dink and dunk. I think his strength is pushing it down the field. It's letting it fly. The biggest thing I noticed during that part of the game was the speed of Jaheim White, though. I think those two together could be dangerous.
I like not mobility necessarily. I don't think Nico's a statue like we all expected him to be. I think he can move a little bit. I mean, he had a nice read option there on the touchdown. He had a nice little touchdown run. There's a couple things he needs to work on. I still think now, after I've seen them both, I think Green is way ahead of him as far as terms of playing time. But that can change as practice goes on and everything. I still think Nico needs some work. Thought his first throw was a little, wasn't lazy, I don't want to say, but it took a long time to get there, that crossing route, well, corner route, whatever you want to call it. It took a long time to get there. I thought his arm would be a little bit stronger.
Yeah, honestly, I think I'm going to have to get more of a sample size from him, but I thought maybe his arm was a little weaker than I expected it to be. He can still place the ball pretty good, and he's mobile. He ran a couple of times for some first downs, you know, but I don't know. I think from my sample size of yesterday.
Just based on yesterday.
I can see why they went with Garrett Green.
But, that's Duquesne, and it's, you know, there's a lot of season to go. A lot of practices to go and everything like that. But I was surprised. I thought his arm would be stronger.
He makes that throw from the hash to the sideline well. Yeah. I've noticed he's got flashes where it looks like he has an NFL-type arm. Maybe we just haven't seen him enough.
Need more of a sample size. I'm just going by what I saw yesterday.
And against a step up in competition.
Right. Yeah. So let's talk about this running backs room. You know, even before we start talking about, you know, Jaheim White and what's the young kid's name that they put in late in the game?
I don't even remember his name.
He scored twice.
But
anyway, even before we start talking about them, we knew that running backs room was solid. C.J. Donaldson looks like he's on ice skates out there. He just glides. I was even trying to think this morning in my lifetime of watching running backs, does he remind? I don't know if it's Eric Dickerson with those big long strides, you know, big back, long strides. It's not like a Barry Sanders, like shot out of a rocket type of thing. It's just, I'm going to just kind of take my time around this corner and let these blocks develop and then hit the hole. He just glides when he runs. The only issue I had with him yesterday was on that fourth down. There was a fourth down where he converted it. Mm-hmm. He didn't have the urgency to just get the 2 yards. He was trying to wait. You know how he waits. He was trying to wait it out. And he got caught behind the line. He was just able to push himself forward. I want to see him when it's fourth and one, third and one, you know, dude, just hit the hole, get your 2-3 yards and get down, you know, don't worry about trying to hit the home run. So, but I mean, and when I say that, man, that's super nitpicky. Now I'm being nitpicky because I think he's so talented. If he stays at West Virginia, I think he's going to end up being one of the greatest.
I would have preferred to see him carry the ball like four times yesterday.
Yeah. What? Now, see, again,
he only carried it about 10 or 12. He may not even have that many. But
did he, like, get taken down funny, like do like a split or something?
Yeah, something happened. I missed it because my little nephew was up there, and he was raising Cain. He thought it was romper room. I couldn't really watch close when that happened. And but he did come out of the game, but I would have preferred to see him. You know, I wanted to see 21-0 at the end of one, and Donaldson sit on the bench the rest of the game. But the Anderson had a nice night, 12 for 110 and two touchdowns. That's a good day, even if it is Duquesne.
Yeah, he played well. When he gets the edge, he's tough.
He's
to catch.
Quick. Yeah, he's fast. It's a good running back room. A lot of depth there, so you might need it too with the way it looks like. You know, we're going to probably have to run these guys into the ground if we can't get the passing game going.
You know, one of the things I like about having a deep running back room is in history, it has every, you know, these guys take a lot of poundings,
they
man.
They get killed.
And you need that. You need guys that are going to be able to step up when certain guys go down. So it's good to
when you get late in the season and these guys, like, especially like a Donaldson. If you get out there in like the 10th, 11th game and he can just run all game long on you, man, that's a long day, especially for a team that might not be very good. They may just mail it in and quit. And that's nice to have. It's nice to have that luxury.
You know, Oliver was the kid that was in there late. True freshman, 10 carries. He had 38 yards, but I thought he was a solid running back. Anderson was looking good. And then Jaheim White. Jaheim White, 115 yards. He reminds me of another guy that used to wear 22 that we know. He, you know, kind of short in stature,
yep.
But gets positive yards at all the times.
Yeah, went down there at field level while Jaheim White was in the game. I was almost falling asleep in the press box. I think I'd been in there for like 4 hours. So went down to the concourse.
They probably
level.
Turned the air conditioning off on you guys too.
They did. Got to watch a little Texas Bama, but still needed a change of scenery. And he's got legitimate speed. He can fly. On the one that was a touchback where he should have scored a touchdown, that quick burst from the 30 to like the 15 or the 10. You really saw what Jaheim White's capable of. I hope he does get incorporated more into the game plan. I think he's a little more slippery maybe than the other backup backs.
He's a great change of pace to Donaldson, yep. Put it that way.
We just got
to
get everybody's names right.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
Jalen,
Jaheim. And there's so many players CJ. From the transfer. This guy transferred in, this guy transferred out, this guy transferred in. You can't keep track of all of them, man. I mean, it's wild.
Do we still have Justin Johnson?
Hell, he didn't play last night. If he's on the, I thought he was on the roster still.
He didn't play. If he is, yeah, I said Anderson had the 12 for 110. I was wrong. It was White that had the 12 for 110. Yeah.
He's pretty fast.
Yeah,
Hudson Clement, what a story. You know, obviously Martinsburg kid. After the game, he's awarded a scholarship. You know, my thing is, where does he fit into this thing now? Is this enough of a sample size for him to go, okay, we're gonna make him a part of the offense? He was able to get open, run the routes, catch the balls, be a solid possession receiver for us. Like, hell, he's more than a possession receiver. He's a deep threat.
What would it hurt to give that kid a chance?
Since
it would not hurt to let him play. Put him out there against Pitt. See what he does. He can't be any worse than what we've seen at wide receiver the last 4 or 5 seasons. He can't be any worse. If he's the same, he's the same. If he's better, then great. He can't be any worse.
This is incredibly simple to me. West Virginia needs to play guys that will catch the football. So far, Taylor, Clement, and Devin Carter have not put it on the ground. I'd start those three, and if I'm Garrett Green, I'm looking their way.
I agree wholeheartedly with that. I don't care how slow or fast or how whatever they run, catch the football.
He was not slow.
No, but I mean, I'm just saying, I don't care. I don't care. I don't care if they're fast. I don't care. Catch the football. That's the main thing when you're a receiver. Get open, catch the ball.
Where was Carter yesterday?
He was injured. He'll be back next week.
Okay, because that it was weird. He was dressed.
That would have been a very, very big mismatch for Duquesne.
Yeah.
He's a big dude.
Well, yeah, even if he was slightly injured, it's like, just have a seat, pal. We need you next week.
Yeah.
He was out. I think it was an injury. I got to double check that. But Neil Brown did clarify that he's back next week.
He was just he had his shoulder pads and helmet on. Okay. And I kept thinking, well, why aren't they putting him out there? But then, you know, even the slightest tweak.
Yeah, I wouldn't have messed with it either. I'd have left him on the sidelines.
But, you know, the Clemson, it's a great story, though. The Martinsburg kid gets a scholarship. You know, they award him. They said it was, how did Brown phrase it in the press conference? In the heat of action promotion or something like that is what he called it. It's almost like a war reference. But, you know, I'm happy to see him. Obviously, listen, if you Martinsburg is a hell of a football program. And why we don't get more kids from there, like the kid that's playing for the Bears. I mean, he's a Martinsburg kid, I believe.
Badgin or something like that, the quarterback. Yeah. He's a backup for the Bears, and West Virginia didn't even offer him.
Yeah. Well, nobody offered him, to be fair.
He was a Shepherd, but, I mean, still, man. And then, like, you see kids from Martinsburg. You know, that's where Wesco was from. He came from Martinsburg, but he had to go junior college route to get to WVU. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like, what a... You know, I don't understand.
They're playing a different brand of football. I can almost see, like, you know, if somebody's putting up huge numbers in the Kanawha Valley,
yeah,
you know, it's easy to throw 11 touchdowns against my poor Red Dragons. But, you know, and I'm not beating up on those kids, but they just don't have a lot of numbers and they're super young. But, you know, it's easy to do that. But this valley is weak. So it's easy to see, you know, see a kid put those kind of numbers up and you're like, it doesn't matter the numbers. He can't play at this level. But I think Martinsburg is a different brand of football.
But see, they play teams from other states, too. And they beat those teams just as bad. I don't know if anybody remembers McSorley from Penn State, Trace McSorley. They played Martinsburg when he was in high school. That was the only loss they put. Well, the only team he lost to was Martinsburg. Like, they beat McSorley's team. That's the only, I'm pretty sure it's the only game he lost in high school.
What does West Virginia have to improve on? We've seen the extremes. We see them against a team that could potentially be in the top 10 for the rest of the season. And then we've seen them against a team that basically had 40 scholarship athletes on it. And who actually has won like 5 conference championships in the last 10 years. Good team from that league, but just apples to oranges. What we've seen the sample size. What's West Virginia have to improve on going into the backyard brawl?
Defending the deep ball, just in the secondary, I'm not sure what it's going to take. I mean, I think you have to switch up personnel as it pertains to the safety spot.
Yeah, it's a no-brainer to me. It's the same. You can't get beat over and over and over by Duquesne and expect to go out there and hold Pitt receivers and TCU receivers and Texas Tech receivers. Those guys are going to have a field day on West Virginia if something doesn't change. I mean, I don't know the answer. I'm not the defensive coordinator. Pelek got a lot of money to figure it out. He needs to figure it out in a hurry.
$250 an hour.
And I don't know. It might be a talent issue. There might not be any talent there. I have no idea, but they've been recruiting for 5 years. So something's got to give. Put somebody in there that can play or do something. I mean, because what's going on right now is definitely not working. I was very disappointed in the secondary yesterday.
Yeah, it hasn't helped them over the last few years losing guys like Pitts and, you know.
He's in the NFL. Kerry Martin had an interception for Akron last night.
Yeah. You know, we've lost a lot of guys. And then we had, what was the kid's name? He went to Georgia. And then.
Oh, yeah. I forgot he didn't play for Georgia.
And one kid go to Auburn. Yeah. I mean, like, so they've lost a few guys in the transfer portal. But, you know, you've got to kind of replace them, though, with apples to apples. And you can't go out and lose a guy who's a first team all Big 12 player, then go over to directional state.
That's the thing. They're trying to replace Division I players with, like, you know, division or what is it, FBS with FCS and power non-power five, which, I mean, those kids are good. I'm not saying they're not good players. They're all good players. They earn a scholarship. But they're not on the level of a Big 12 talent, and that's the problem. It's like West Virginia's trying to compete against the Big 12 with a MAC-level roster, say.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and you can occasionally go over and grab
sometimes it'll happen.
But you can't. That can't it's be not, your
it can't be your go. That's what we're doing, though. Like, we got Kopka, I believe how you say it. He's fantastic. That kid's really good.
Can't be your play.
But you can't get 11 Kopkas from the portal because, you know, there aren't 11 Kopkas in the portal. Chances are you're getting more of a lower-level player is what you're actually going
to
get.
And the guys that we do have to take advantage of opportunities. If you pick off those two passes at Penn State, the complexion of that game changes. And against Duquesne, you have the luxury to say, okay, Hudson Clement, it's your day. But that's going to kill you against Pitt if those guys, Cortez, Braham, Preston Fox, early on a 50-50 ball, really it was open, catches that football, you have to take advantage of the chances that you have.
That's part of the coaching as well, though. As long as they're in position to make plays, I'm fine with it. More often than not, though, the secondary's not in position to make plays.
Well, the bright lights come on next week because it's West Virginia Pitt in primetime on ABC.
Let's go.
Listen, probably the most anticipated football game I remember being at Mountaineer Field next to the last time Virginia Tech came in 05. And then I'm thinking anticipated games, right?
Virginia Tech came in, what, 21?
05.
They were really good.
That was the only
loss West Virginia had.
Well, that's the only time I've not been able to physically get a ticket.
The LSU game was pretty crazy.
Yeah, I forgot LSU.
Yeah, I forgot about that one. But you're talking about games that you thought you might win.
This will be the first time Pitt's visited since 2011. Yeah.
So it's a big time game. And do you think Neil Brown's got the message that this is important to the fans? Because remember last year he was caught on mic saying all this hype for this game, and you know,
if he doesn't get the message, he's never going to get the message. I'll tell you what. If they lose on Saturday, he'll hear it loud and clear.
Listen, there were people yesterday that came back to the house where I was at that were wanting to go to his home and put for sale signs in his yard.
Well, it was 14-10 against Duquesne.
I think that was an overreaction. I mean, not necessarily the moving thing, but being upset about the 14-10 thing.
It was bad. It was horrible. I don't think
it's an overreaction because there's – again, it goes back to – it is Duquesne.
You just said that Tennessee and Austin Peay were 6-6 in the second quarter.
Yeah, I know. But the thing is, Tennessee doesn't have the same issues that West Virginia has. We've seen this act before from West Virginia. We've seen it, all three of us. In the last 5 years, it's kind of what we're getting. His first game, he beat James Madison 20-13.
Well, James Madison is a little different.
Again, though. And then he said, well, I'm going to enjoy this victory. What was so enjoyable about that? You beat a 1AA team by 7 points.
These were just the early signs, the early indicators when Trust the Climb was cool. These were the things that it made sense to be skeptical
about.
You
get out there, and like fans, you know, people were like, all the fans are stupid. They don't see this and they don't see that. And I'm not disagreeing that, like, we don't see certain things. However, you can spot an issue. And I think the panic level came from there were dudes streaking wide open.
We're in a relationship with Neil Brown. It's almost like a husband and wife and someone's cheated.
Yeah.
And the relationship's never going to be fixed. He could literally go out and win the Big 12 this year, and people will still not want him around next year.
If he wins the Big 12 this year, kudos to him, and he will be around next year. I mean, that would be unbelievable.
But I'm saying the relationship is over.
Yeah, the trust factor has been broken. These recruits not panning out. I think that's why people don't trust him.
Yeah, people are not trusting him, the staff at this point. And even if they win next week, and even if they beat Texas Tech and they're 3-1, it's kind of like that.
We're just waiting on you to mess up.
Just waiting for you to come home late one night so I can yell at you again.
That's what you're waiting on.
The party's over for him. I mean, you know, 6-7 wins isn't going to get it done. Even with a bowl win, I don't think it gets it done for the fan base. The majority of the fan base doesn't care.
No, I mean, and again, that goes back to where – like, everybody being upset about it 14-10 against Duquesne. Yeah, I was upset because, like I said, I saw a team that was out there making the same exact mistakes that we see week after week, year after year.
Pitt, West Virginia, what are some of your favorite memories from this rivalry? I've got several.
Anytime Pitt loses.
The one, I think it was the last time we played them at home, maybe the second to last. They had Baldwin at receiver who was really good, and they were ranked high. We were unranked but still had a chance to grab a piece of the Big East crown. And I remember I went to that game with my dad. It was really fun. It was the same weekend where Tiger Woods got his windshield smashed, and that whole scandal broke out.
Speaking of cheating spouses.
That might help me remember the year, but that was an upset win over Pitt.
I think it was 11.
2011.
No, it was 10.
Was it? I thought it was 2009.
Yeah. 2009? Yeah. Okay. That game stands out.
The one to me, I don't know why, but I always laugh when I see Pat White on the bench. Doing the Panther or whatever. I think they were winning that game like 27-24, and it ended up 45-27, and Steve Slayton and Pat White just, they went berserk in the second half.
Yeah, that was a Thursday that night was a game.
That was a good one. And then there was one year they came to Morgantown. Zach Abraham, 94, is the best, in my opinion. That's the best one. You probably don't remember that one. You weren't even born. Zach Abraham's best to me. But that one, and then the there was one year they came to Morgantown, and WVU had had a bunch of injuries, but they got healthy and beat them like 55-14. It was Bulger.
99.
Was that 99? I couldn't remember the year.
Yeah,
I couldn't
Mark, remember Mark had been most out most of the year with a knee and then his hand. He threw and then, smacked his hand off of somebody's helmet, but then they came back healthy.
And they beat Pitt into the ground.
They had moved Porter back to receiver, and you got a glimpse of what that team was supposed to be because they were supposed to be pretty good that year, although they had lost Zaraway, but that was Avon's freshman year, and they lost to East Carolina to open because Mark got rolled up on, they put in Brad Lewis, and ECU won, and then it just never really recovered. But all big ones. My favorite games, probably 98 Pitt, being in Three Rivers Stadium. I think Mark threw like five touchdowns that day. And the backstory on that, my aunt at the time worked for the University of Pittsburgh. You know, so this is at Three Rivers. So we tell my Aunt Robin, hey, get us
some tickets.
Get us like 10 tickets and we'll all go. It's Thanksgiving weekend. Yeah. My mom, dad, sister, my sister's at WVU at the time. And then so we all go. And, of course, it's like a 3:30 game. So I'm kind of tuned up. I'm like 20. How old am I at the time? 21. 22, so I'm kind of tuned up. We roll in there about 3:30, and, man, I ran that entire section out of there, man. We rolled them that day. 99 Pitt was a good day. My favorite Pitt experience, though, was when it was Avon's senior year. They had Larry Fitzgerald, and we beat them.
52-31.
No, this was close.
It wasn't the 52-31 game?
No, because Rutherford tried three times to get the ball to Fitzgerald in the end zone.
52-31 was 03.
And yeah, that was 03. This is 02. And we won, and we thought we were going to the Gator Bowl.
When they gave it to Notre Dame.
Yeah, this was so basically the year before they had gone 3-8, and then we had flipped it and gone 8-3. Thought we were going to the Gator Bowl. They gave it to crap, you know. That pulled that crap where they could jump teams with Notre Dame and all that. Then another great story was in 89.
Oh, that's the 31 all tie.
I've told you guys about this one before, though, I think. So my grandfather, like I said, my grandparents live on the north side of Pittsburgh. It was not uncommon to see my grandpa in a Steelers or even a Pitt sweatshirt. This wasn't uncommon. And nobody was thinking anything about it. They're having a parade right down in front of Dairy Queen. Oh, what is that, Washington, 6th Avenue?
Yeah.
So they're having this big small town parade. All the marching bands and all that. Well, when you go back and watch our home video, you can hear my grandfather, people yelling at him. He had on this bright blue Pitt sweatshirt, big Fort Pitt right across the chest of it. And he was kind of like a big broad-shouldered dude like me. And you can hear him yelling back at people on the floats. And people are yelling at him and throwing stuff like candy, like, we're going to beat you guys. And he kept saying, we're going to whip your ass with a West Virginia quarterback. Because at the time they had Alex Van Pelt. Where was he from? He was from...
I thought he was from Pittsburgh.
No, he was from West Virginia.
See, I thought he was from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
No, he was from West Virginia. And, man, and my grandmother was trying to get him back onto the sidewalk. So that's one of the ones that really kind of stand out. But that just shows you the rivalry and what that kind of brings out in people. But it's just been a great series, and I'm glad to see it back. And hopefully Rem Baker can get the scheduling thing straightened out because, you know, obviously you don't want to play Pitt and Penn State in the same season. I'm not so sure Penn State's coming to Morgantown next year.
I'm not so sure. We're going to see a lot of games in the future with the way these conferences are going.
But even if, like, I could see him dropping Alabama and some of these games in the future, but I'm not so sure Penn State's going to return the favor next year. I think Wren's going to...
Is it a home and home?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess they're Penn State. I mean, they can...
It's not them. I think West Virginia... I think Baker's going to try to get out of it. Just my opinion.
I wouldn't want to do that. I think the home fans deserve to see that one more time. Even if you bang it moving forward.
Or
you want to see that one more time.
Or they could potentially move the next two pick games to the back end.
See, I'm almost to a point where I wouldn't play anybody out of conference if I was in these big conferences. I'd pull what Michigan's doing. I wouldn't play anybody.
Well, and I think that's what they're trying to get to. So either they're going to drop the Penn State game or they're going to move the next two Pitt games to the back end of our – move it down the road six years.
You could play a Big 12 game week one, play your cupcake game, then Penn State, and during the nationwide rivalry weekend, try to sandwich the Pitt game in there.
Yeah, I mean,
that's how they do it in the SEC with Clemson, South Carolina, Georgia Tech.
Yeah, I just don't see West Virginia continuing to play Pitt and Penn State in the same season.
You gain nothing. I don't care who it is. Like we saw Texas and Alabama last night. You gain nothing by playing that game. You just lose.
Well, it's TV.
I mean, but the thing is like if Alabama and Texas would have both been better off going to beat the doors.
No, I disagree with you though, because that now Texas has an advantage. If they are a team, there's six teams and they're arguing about people that should be in with one loss.
Yeah, Texas has that win.
Texas is going to pull that right out of their hat and throw it on the table.
It doesn't help you in a lot of ways just because there's another avenue to get to the CFP hypothetically, even if you don't have an insanely hard non-conference schedule. But let me ask you this. If Rich Rodriguez is the coach of West Virginia next season, does that change your mind a little bit? If you have somebody with a little bit different mentality that knows what that Penn State game's all about and that you have more confidence will improve the squad.
Man, I don't care if they go and dig up Art Pappy Lewis and stead him over there in his casket. We have a better shot at this next year. I'm just how I feel about it. I'm not a Neil Brown fan supporter. I'm counting down the days. People get so bent out of shape, and you've heard me say it. What was I telling all your family last week? I was like, guys, December's right around the corner.
Yes, it'll be here before you know it.
So don't worry. It's almost over.
It's not. I want Coach Brown to be successful. I like Neil Brown. I think he's a great person. I think he's fantastic. I want him to be successful more than anybody. But it's just not happening at West Virginia. For some reason, there's just not something that's happening.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's time. It's been time. It was time last year, but for some reason, he was retained. Everybody sees the same thing this year, and everybody's complaining. I knew not to complain because I knew what to expect.
Hey, I'm too fat and out of shape. I can't afford to get my blood pressure up.
Just say, hey, they're going 5. Just say, hey, they're going 5-7 and go on with your business.
Yeah. What did you think about them? You probably missed it. Did you hear where they played Sweet Caroline over the PA last night?
You can't really hear in there.
I didn't hear it. I didn't hear it. I was probably watching another game.
It was late in the game. It was about the middle of the fourth, and they played it over the PA. And my first thought was, God, whenever I ran all that, I got in trouble one time for playing a song by Ludacris that referenced marijuana. The line in the song is, smoking that Cheech and Chong. I had to go into the assistant AD's office on Monday morning and explain myself. Then here they were playing Sweet Caroline over the PA so the crowd could get nuts.
Yeah.
Wow. Were you the DJ?
I used to control the music, the video board, the whole deal in the stadium.
God, that's why the music was so bad up in late night.
Oh, it actually was because they didn't want you to do, like, for instance, the marching band stopped playing Rock and Roll Part 1 by Gary Glitter. Dun, 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 yeah. Dun, dun, dun. Hey, because our students would go, you suck. So they made them stop playing it.
Ridiculous. Ridiculous.
So I was just shocked. Like, well, it caught me off guard last night.
I hope the administration's present Saturday.
Yeah. I bet you they don't play it Saturday.
Well, I don't care. They're going to hear it.
Hey, don't forget for you podcast listeners, make sure you listen to the radio broadcast or the radio playback on the podcast, on the podcast platforms. Listen for the Alumni Hall Trivia Question of the Week. Shout out to Chris Ferris from Merle Inlet, South Carolina. The winner, I don't know what's happened to my text app, but totally missed it. He had texted in, and he was the first, because I thought, well, nobody cared. Nobody even turned in their stuff.
Down there in Myrtle Beach, Morrell's Inlet, good food out there. Enjoy Morrell. The garb.
Oh, what did I say, Merle? Morrell's
Inlet. Get you some seafood.
So Chris Ferris answered a trivia question last week, so we'll get his card out to him. $25 gift certificate to Alumni Hall. The phone number for those are 304-9696-TDC, 304-96-9832. We had a few text messages, and we'll read these real quick, and then we'll get out of here. Let's see here. Dun, dun, dun. That's what I like about the podcast. This one came in, said, this is from 304, then the first three numbers, 3307. Dion's going to prove me right. West Virginia sat around. Oh, okay, here we go. West Virginia sat around and missed out on Dion last year. Probably wasn't even in the discussion for the job. Going to take Colorado, that's just a few weeks ago, into TCU and win. Boys are motivated and prepared today. Dion brings players to West Virginia too closed-minded as usual. I will not disagree.
Preaching to the choir.
Especially this guy.
Yeah, lobbied for it all year last season. Yeah,
Michael was all over it.
Michael changed his name to Neon.
I mean, I don't care who they get. I don't care who they get.
Bring on Art Lewis.
Bring him on. It can't be any, I mean, who you go get that's worse? I mean, there's 10 guys you can name that's better, and yeah, I mean, I don't blame him.
All right, there's a couple other ones here. Somebody texted and called the number and said, I have serious problems. I'm running out of gas. I'm low on fuel. those are not the type of requests that we will respond to. Sorry.
Hey, man, I hope you're all right out there. Yeah. Or lady, I hope you're all right.
Yeah, sorry we missed that one. So, hey, thank you guys for checking out the touchdowns. Let me start that over. You can tell it was a long day yesterday. Yeah. Thank you guys for checking out the Touchdown City Show this week on your favorite podcast platform. Make sure you hit the subscribe button. And also, if you have the time and you would be kind enough, please stop by and leave a review. And don't forget, check it out on your favorite podcast platforms. Go to touchdowncity.com for any details. And also, make sure you check us out on the radio broadcast. And throughout the course of the week, we'll have more stuff popping up. Gentlemen, it's good to see you guys. And for the listeners, thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.
Visit our new website at touchdowncity.com. The Touchdown City Show is produced by Anthony Lewis in partnership with HD Media, the Charleston Gazette-Mail.